child protection has a bunch of streams. They're not just a child removal, child safety, if you will, streamline. And so I would rather overcall than undercall to them what they do. They don't just call the family out the gate and remove a child. That's a myth.
Hello, and welcome to the Interior Health Nursing Grand Rounds, a podcast conversation. I am your host, Allison Thomas, and on this podcast, we talk all things nursing and healthcare. I work as the clinical nurse specialist in the Trauma Services Network in Interior Health. Interior Health would like to recognize and acknowledge the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Dakal Dene, Tanaha, Inglekatma, Shawepam, Statliam, Sioux, and Chicoltean nations, where we live, learn, collaborate, and work together. Welcome back. We're here with Tracy Scott, clinical nurse specialist for child maltreatment and sexual violence in Interior Health. This is part two of our conversation. If you haven't listened to our previous episode, I encourage you to go back and have a listen to that. And in this episode, Tracy's going to teach us a little bit about duty to report and what we should be doing if we are concerned that one of our patients is being maltreated. Tracy, take it away.
Development, which I'll talk about duty report. You've got experts that you could consult with in the time. So particularly, not just emergency department, it can be on any unit. If you have a child that you're concerned about and you want to talk that out a bit more, or you want to consult with an expert, you've got our regional scan clinic, and I can provide that. It's in our toolkit as well, the child maltreatment toolkit. You can call. Our clinic is open Monday to Friday, and you have access to experts there to ask your questions. We also have in my after hours, if the child comes in, you can call BC Children's Child Protection Team, the pediatrician on call, and get some guidance and direction as well. That's different from a duty report, which I want to stay a bit clear for, but that's if you have questions or concerns, like, is this an injury? I'm not sure what I'm seeing. I have concerns. Can we talk that more about? So absolutely use your regional CYC scan clinic. We work, like I said, very collaboratively also with the four CYCs. So if it's a child in that community, we will be collaborating, communicating with. So no one needs to worry about where that needs to go. We can just streamline that through the scan clinic. But please do consult. We'd rather, as kids show up, you reach out earlier than later so that we can support your staff as well in your busy departments. There is a way to refer to the scan clinic as well. So at the end of the day, yeah, this looks like it's a suspected child abuse or a known child abuse case. There's a referral pathway, an order enter system that we have in Interior Health that you can order enter or you can call, whatever works best for you. That's in the child maltreatment toolkit, all those resources. There's then the duty report.
Yeah. So you've told us, Tracy, it's been really eye-opening, and you've told us some things to look out for in our patients, some red flags, some assessment pieces that we need to remember how to do. That's really helpful. Can you tell us next? So if this is my patient and now I'm suspicious that something is not going well for my little patient, what am I supposed to do next?
Yeah, thank you for that. So first of all, like I said, it's really important to escalate it. If you have, it is by legislation and through the Child and Family Service Community Act that we have a legal obligation to report any concerns we have around child maltreatment. So it doesn't need to be known. I would certainly be escalating it to your ERP or your MRP, whoever that is, and having those conversations. I would absolutely be involving social worker out the gate to be involved as well. So definitely a referral to social worker. But the reality is, even if somebody doesn't feel as heightened and concerned as yourself, you still have a legal obligation to report. So say, for example, you said to your emergency room physician and you had concerns, and again, it doesn't need to be proven, then, and the physician didn't have concerns, that still falls on you to make a report. And it really, the person making the report needs to be the one with the most amount of information. So there is a number to call CFD Central Screening. It can be a bit of a lengthy wait at times, and they're trying to work on that as well, which is speaks to, again, the volume of child maltreatment being experienced, the magnitude of it. But it's really important that you have the information that you need to provide so much history as you have to provide to them. So escalating it, making a report to MCFD, that's your duty report. And we do have, for Interior Health, it's our policy AL0600, which is our duty report suspected child abuse and neglect. That's also in there. And in there, we've got a clinical decision support tool that can give you a bit of information more about what to expect when you call, what kind of information they need, and all sorts of things. And it actually has the information on red flags as well that you can also go through. And there's also the BC Handbook for Action on Child Abuse and Neglect for Service Care Providers. Again, that's in our resources and child maltreatment toolkit, really a lot of information for us as healthcare providers on our duty report and what that looks like and identifying child abuse in the first place. So yeah, so escalating and reporting it to MCFD. If a child's in immediate danger and you have concerns, you would call police right out the gate. But child maltreatment and law enforcement work hand in hand, and they have an obligation to report to each other as well. So yeah, that is the thing. I think one thing in my practice is ensuring that the child's safe. If I can assure that the child's safe, and sometimes it's a healthy caregiver that's bringing them in, or what we call the non-offending caregiver, and we feel safe that they've brought them in, for example, and said, I have concerns that my child's been hurt. You know, that tells me that you got a bit of a protecting parent. And really, the legislation says that the child's in need of protection. If it's clear the child has a really protecting parent and it's a neighbor that they were worried about and the mom and dad brought the child in, you know, you have a really protecting mom and dad. But there are other cases you're not sure. First of all, child protection has a bunch of streams. They're not just a child removal, child safety, if you will, streamline. And so I would rather overcall than undercall to them. What they do, they don't just call the family out the gate and remove a child. I think that's a myth, or it is a myth. What they do is they do their due diligence to see if there's other prior incidents, and they start putting that picture together, if you will. But they have lots of support systems as well. And so sometimes if I see a family struggling, resource-wise, but emotion-wise, you know, we can also offer reaching out to MCFD, as they have all these programs and services for support. It's about re-educating our community that they really have a lot of supportive streams, and that just by calling them, getting them involved, has not necessarily anything to do with your concerns, but they do have some. There are more resources for family that we can be offering as well, and you can connect with them together. But I'm transparent too. If I have a concern about a child and with the caregiver, you know, I do let them know that I have some concerns, and that I will, it's part of my legal obligation to make a call to child protection. And I try to just get them to be part of the solution at that point. Certainly if that escalates, you know, that's different, and you can do that with us. But I personally try to be transparent, but that's not, you know, that we've also had a lot of education, sort of trauma-informed approaches to that sort of thing as well. But yeah, I like our parents to know, you know what, this is making sense to me. I'm finding this really concerning. I'd love to get you some support as well, but this is part of my legal obligation, is to make that report. And again, just making them part of the solution as much as possible, and seeing really, you know, do they need any support? Do they have any worries? Do they have any concerns? Are they feeling safe? Or did they feel their child safe? You know, I just think it could go up, you know, with a lot of education and more education for staff, we can, you know, slowly start, you know, teaching staff more about those trauma-informed conversations to have with even caregivers that we know are under a lot of stress, more stress than ever than they've been before, really. How as healthcare providers, we can really be a safe place for people to be honest with us, that they're frustrated, and let us help, you know, be a help to gain them some resources and offering them some tools. Really trying to work hard with our public health nurses and do more work in the future too. I mean, they're the finger on the pulse, they're in the homes, primary care physicians, you know, they're really hearing the stresses and the risk factors go up. So prevention, like I say, is really key. And if we can sort of hone in on, you know, frustrations and stuff sooner than later, then, you know, the hope is that we could prevent some of this. But certainly if we can't, then early intervention, which means early recognition, and providing a safe place for kids to be honest and disclose if they are unsafe or if they are being hurt. And you can ask children questions alone. If you have concerns, again, so you have an older child and you have concerns, you can ask the guardian to just leave the room, you know, that the child's old enough that you just had some questions about the child's health and would like a few minutes alone. If the parent's really not wanting to, sometimes I pay attention to that too, especially if the child seems fine with you, you asking questions, and then you can be honest with the kids. You know, are you feeling safe? Do you have any, can you tell me more about that injury? And yeah, I think it's, there's not a one and done, if you will, cookie cutter way to approaches, but I think we're really talented as nurses in that patient centered care, and really just being intuitive and really feeling something doesn't fit right, and just really paying attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is there anything else, Allison, that I haven't touched on?
Yeah, I'm wondering, so if there are listeners out there who've been hearing you speak and they're really interested in this work, how do they get more involved? Can you point towards some resources, some extra education, maybe if there's a website or somewhere that nurses could be looking for? What would you recommend?
Yeah, thank you for that. So like I was saying, we're just starting to evolve our SAFE program, our sexual assault forensic examination program there. And what we're really leaning towards is training forensic nurse examiners. And so there is courses through BCIT and others on becoming a forensic nurse examiner, which really provides you, when I took that through BCIT, the foundation on child maltreatment as well as sexual violence. So it's looking at injury identification and describing and documenting. So looking more at sort of different forms of injury, trauma, as opposed to lacerations and different other things, or stab wounds. It's really, that kind of education is important. And if you're interested in becoming a forensic nurse examiner or a sexual assault nurse examiner as part of our program, you can certainly reach out to myself or Kathleen Nicholson around that. There's websites. The International Association of Forensic Nurses is got a ton of information. Canadian Forensic Nurses Association. You can always go in and look really at the Child Maltreatment Toolkit. I'm going to be trying to load that up with more and more education resources. And I'd love to hear back from your audience or participants if there's an area that you would like to see more work done or more education. Again, this role is new, and so I really want to be making sure not only I'm serving the children and the youth that we serve, but also those that are healthcare providers. So if there's some topics or some lunch and learns or some things you guys want us to know more about, just send that off our way. Our scan clinics often puts on presentations, so happy to do that. But yeah, I'll probably start loading up our education part with when I know of courses or anything coming out. But yeah, forensic nurse examiner is certainly a neat way to go. And getting involved in your child and youth advocacy centers and letting them know you're interested in the work as well is important, but certainly reach out to me with any interest and I can direct you a bit further.
That's great. I have one last question, Tracy, and it may be personal, so answer however you'd like, but sure. I when I hear about this work that you're doing, I think about the emotional cost of doing that work. And do you have advice for nurses who are carrying the emotional cost of caring for children and families with child maltreatment? Can you speak to that at all?
Yeah, no, you bring up such a good question. I think what's really hard in this area is after we are privy to, if you will, trauma in this way, we don't get to close the loop. So as healthcare providers, we don't get to hear the outcome. Like, were the children put in a safe environment? Was there, you know, justice brought? We don't get to hear. So one thing you can do is if you know law enforcement's involved, you can always reach out and just see, you know, what was the outcome. If that's something you need to close the loop, there's definitely, as you know, resources on the Inside Net to support. We've done debriefs with healthcare providers. So absolutely reach out to myself if you have any need for that to debrief, and we can get a team together for that. Happy to do that. It's not information any of us should hear and be part of. And so if it feels really disheartening and causes some trauma for ourselves, that's because it's not something that we should know and hear about. And so I would say honor yourselves in that. You know, when we know the statistics, the chances one of our nurses will have been also impacted by violence at some point during their lifetime. And so really being aware of what they need to do for themselves to be well in that, and really tending to themselves first and acknowledging that something's brought up something for them, and seeking whatever resources they need for themselves. But one thing that has kept me well in doing this work for 23 years now is in my mind, I'm able to, if you will, see it from a bit of a different lens. So I really focus more on the privilege and honor I've had to be part of the solution. So one thing I can tell you, and even doing my own exams on kids, particularly in child sexual abuse cases, when a child or youth who has experienced violence comes in and we get to do a head-to-toe complete examination, and I'm able to say to them at the end of the day, you know what, no matter what happened to you today, your body is healthy and normal, just like every other child or youth. Nobody can tell that what happened to you. You're perfect in every way. Everything's good. You're healthy. I literally have had kids almost bounce off the table like, I'm healthy, and run out to their parents. I'm normal. So our part as healthcare providers, when we're able to provide these children, you know, we might not have been able to prevent it, but we can certainly switch the pendulum towards the other way of healing. And so I feel so privileged to work with these kids that I get to switch that pendulum and really acknowledge them, hear them, commend them, assure them that they're healthy and well. And so I just think, how dare I not? Like, I'm so grateful that I have an opportunity to do something well for these children. Mm-hmm. And that for me, when I see it as such a privilege and honor, I see it differently. And so I show up, and that's not to say some cases don't really resonate with me or hit home, and I just need to do a bit more work around that. But at the end of the day, they came to me, they showed up, mm-hmm. they survived the trauma they've been through, and I'm going to be there for them. And I'm going to help them through whatever part of that I need. And I just think as nurses, we're so blessed to be even in this work. And like I say, other nurses too, like even if you're not an examiner, I think the fact that you were kind and compassionate and you heard, and when victims even of sexual assault come in, you say, thank you for showing up, what courage it took you to come to the hospital. I've got you, you're safe here. You know, just being compassionate and kind. No one cares how good we start an IV or how well we change dressing. They really just want kind and compassionate work and hands-on, which we do well. And I just would encourage us, in when you're dealing with children and youth, to just remember that you're part of the solution and how amazing it was and what a great opportunity you had to show some that child or youth and that family some kindness to really, yeah, be part of the solution, changing the mm-hmm. trajectory. So for me, that's how I keep myself well, is just really, really, really grateful for that privilege, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's beautiful, Tracy. Thank you. Sincerely, yeah. Thank you for all the work that you and your teams are doing for kids in our region. And it is so valuable. And I know that those listening will agree that it's such important work. And you really are leading the way nationally. So thank you for doing that work for us. And thank you for your time today. I know you're very busy with your very large portfolio. So thanks so much for coming. And I hope we can have you again, because there's so much I'm sure we got the tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. I think there's so much mm-hmm. more for us to learn. And we're just so grateful that you came to share your expertise with us today.
Thank you, Allison. Like I said, it's just huge. The last message I could get along is just for all of us to be heightened awareness and working in protective roles for these children, advocating. Then we've done our due diligence here today. Mm-hmm. So thank you for providing the platform, Allison, and the great work you do. I appreciate you being part of the solution as well by just hosting this today. So thank you. Appreciate your time. Any further questions that come, don't be afraid to redirect them to me.
You bet. Perfect. Okay, well, we'll just say, if there's any questions or comments, you can reach Tracy or you can email professionalpractice@interiorhealth.ca. And thank you to Interior Health Professional Practice Office for supporting this project. And thank you to the marvelous Dwayne Walwin, who is our sound editor and makes this whole project work for us. So many thanks to all those involved. And thank you, Tracy. And we'll see you soon, I hope.
Okay,
bye-bye. That's all for this episode. Thank you for joining us today. We know you're busy and your time is valuable. Thank you for spending some of it with us. Thank you for your commitment to your profession and to your patients, and being a part of the journey of building a culture of excellence around nursing in our health region.